Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, May 1st, 2017. And with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
And I'm glad you are here, Dave Hamilton. I'm glad you're here as well. How are you?
I'm great. And I'm glad you're here, Jeff. We missed you last week.
You know, I missed you guys too, but I felt comfortable on Thursday and Friday knowing that the show is in good hands. And thank you so much for doing such a great job both days.
Of course. It's how we roll here, man.
I know. I'm very lucky to get to work every day with such awesome and talented people.
Aww.
And you guys too.
That's funny.
Just to be clear,
sign your paycheck.
No. Just to be clear, since my paycheck may hinge on this, that was the joke part. Comic relief. I love you. Please don't fire me. And hey, but on a happy note, Away is our sponsor, and they make this really cool suitcase that we'll talk about soon. But before we get to that, Brian, you've been kind of digging around into this whole textilizer thing and the impact that this could have on us. Fill me in. What's up with that?
Well, you may remember we actually talked about textilizer on the show a year ago.
Yeah, but I don't remember what I had for lunch yesterday.
Yeah, fair enough. Plus, there's been a little bit of a development here. A bill authorizing the use of textilizer has passed out of one committee, according to NPR, in the state of New York. Mm-hmm. It's pending in another committee. And then there's legislators in New Jersey, Tennessee, and then in Chicago. So I don't know if that would be the Chicago city limit or Illinois. Anyway, that are looking at similar bits of authorizing the use of this technology.
Textilizer
is a combination of hardware and software that would allow the cops to plug your phone in and get a readout of your recent activities on your smartphone.
Okay, well, you know, you get a warrant, you get this hooked up.
No warrant needed. No warrant needed. And the idea, this is being pushed by a gentleman named Ben Lieberman, who very tragically lost his son in an accident in 2011. It took Mr. Lieberman months of effort to subpoena records, and eventually, I think he eventually went to the point is that his son was hit by a man who was texting while driving. Tragic loss. And his son died after a month of dealing with the horrific injuries
that he suffered from the results of this accident.
Yes, thank you.
So, yeah, okay. So this is tragic. This is horrible. No one should ever have to go through this as the person that's laying in the hospital bed or as the family of that person. That's just horrible.
Correct. But Mr. Lieberman's solution to this is because the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and Mr. Lieberman is very focused on the fact that this data should be relatively it exists, right? Phones know what they did, mm-hmm. and he believes that it's horrendous that it takes a warrant to be able to access devices in this situation, and he thinks that that's a travesty because basically people who are texting while driving need to be punished because it's such a horrible thing. And you know, my problem with that is a little thing called privacy, and warrantless searches of anything just freak me out. And we need to always be zealously on guard against erosions of our right to privacy, in my not at all humble opinion. And there's one thing that's really come up in the last year that is even more poignant and salient to this particular discussion, and that is that the real solution to texting while driving, and Dave, I know you're gonna empathize with this, are self-driving cars.
Right. Yes. But it's someone else driving for you. Yeah.
Yes. Here's the great thing, though. Self-driving cars are coming. Right? We're eventually have most or all cars in this country, at the very least, be self-driving cars. And at some point, it'll actually be mandated by law. But these books giving police warrantless access to our devices these laws will still be on the books.
I was just going to say, those don't go away when the self-driving, when the impetus, when the catalyst for their existence goes away. And then getting wiping them out after that, because they'll be used for so many other things, is nearly impossible. Right. It's not impossible, but
law enforcement wants to do its job. They want to keep us safe. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, there should be this constant friction between civil liberties and law enforcement. Law enforcement needs to aggressively do its job. The forces that are interested in civil liberty need to be aggressively pushing back against that at all times. Both of those forces need to do their jobs, and laws like this inevitably, they've just alluded to this, inevitably get turned to other purposes.
So
it's just Brian, how it works.
Yeah, of course. That's just how it works. So, Brian, do we know enough about how this works yet to know if this requires phone makers to create special hooks so that Textilizer can work? So, in essence, creating a backdoor for Textilizer.
No. So the company so Mr. Lieberman, his advocacy group is called Dorks. It's Driverless Operators Risk Casualties, which is a silly name, but whatever. Yeah. He's been working with Cellebrite. You remember them?
Yeah, I remember Cellebrite.
Right. They're the guys that sold the FBI a crack to get into Saeed Farouk's
his iPhone 5C.
I just need to correct something because it didn't, your description of Dorks didn't make any sense. It's not driverless operators. It's distracted operators with casualties.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to make, because it didn't make any sense to me. Right. Yeah. I'm like, wait a minute. Driverless means.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. The funny thing is I heard it the way I meant it. And I just wanted to make sure our
listeners knew that it's distracted operators risk casualties.
Okay, so now the acronym makes a little more sense to me.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry about that, folks. Distracted operators risk casualties. Still a silly name, but whatever. So Cellebrite demonstrated this technology working with two Android devices. On a Panasonic tablet with an Android smartphone. I don't know that it could work on a locked iPhone. I don't know if there's any way that they could actually do that.
I think they would need some sort of back door to get into the phone, or they need the access code to get in. And right.
it gets better. This law has gotten out of one committee in New York, right? Well, Cellebrite says that the technology isn't really working entirely yet.
So a law's being pushed through to use a technology that's still in a developmental state.
Yes. And Cellebrite swears that they would customize the technology to apply specifically to whatever local regulations are in place with a law enforcement agency that would be buying it. But you know what? I'm not interested in the taxpayers enriching Cellebrite here and paying for hundreds of thousands of tens of thousands at the least, hundreds of thousands if their wet dreams came true, to have uncounted police have the warrantless power to search our phones. Not interested in that. I'm not interested. I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
Yeah, I fear this leads to mandated backdoors into devices. Because if there's laws in different cities, so now we have this scattered mess of of laws that are requiring the ability to access content, you know, from immediately before some sort of vehicle incident, then that means that device makers would be required at some point to allow that access to happen. So,
yeah, so Mr. Lieberman's point is that he said something along the lines of, can you imagine if a warrant had to be invoked every time someone had a breathalyzer test? But the problem is that breathalyzers and smartphones are not the same thing. Right. Our smartphones are increasingly the center of our digital lives. They have all of the information. They have our credit cards. They have our location data. They have any private pictures between us and our loved ones. They have private communications. They have a lot of stuff. Now, theoretically, Textilizer wouldn't necessarily be able to access any of that. Cellebrite swears up and down that it won't download any content. Well, that's just great. I'm glad that they're swearing that. You know, pardon me for not necessarily wanting that to be like for us to take them on their word for that while we're enriching them by buying, you know, all these devices from them. So, I mean, it's just it should be hard to get in smartphones, even in the case of someone tragically dying. It should be hard to get into smartphones by law enforcement. It should require a warrant.
I'm not overly comfortable with laws that are created that seem ill-informed, even though they have good intentions behind them, because you oftentimes end up with a problem you never anticipated.
Dave, you're being a very slippery slope.
Yes.
You were being silent, Dave, and sometimes that actually means that you're sort of building up a big retort.
No, I'm with you on this. Everything you said makes sense to me. Your idea about this problem being solved, frankly, very quickly, at least in terms of how these things go, is correct. I mean, I think within 10 years, we have many people, especially in highly population-dense areas, using driverless cars, and it's the population-dense areas where the texting is most impactful.
Sure, you have more people.
It doesn't mean that if you're on an open road in the middle of the country that you should be texting while driving, but frankly, that is less dangerous than doing so in the middle of town, right? Or even worse, in the middle of a city, right? So, this is the answer, I'm totally with you on the law side of it.
The chances for catastrophic injury in the case of an accident are actually increased, though, on an open road where people are going at high speeds. Just
sure.
Don't text and drive.
Just don't do it.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Don't Waze and drive either. Just saying.
Actually, you know, my Waze has changed quite a bit. And if you had listened to Matt Geekab recently, you would have heard my opinions on this have changed.
Waze
does a lot less to encourage people to touch their screens while they're driving. You still can. But in fact, they do a lot to discourage people from touching their screens. And in terms of driving directions, Waze is by far the best, because there's Google Apps, there's Apple Maps. Those are what I'll call general purpose navigation apps. They work for driving, for walking, for public transportation, cycling, whatever you want, right? Waze is built only for driving, and the whole experience works a lot better because it's geared 100% towards that. So in my recent travels where I've been driving around the country I'm driving around the Northeast quite a bit, Waze has become my friend, and I've used it quite a bit. I love it.
Maybe it's time for me to give Waze a try again. I actually deleted it in the middle of a route because I had so many instances where the information it gave me was so wrong. The routes it took me on were so wrong. So, all right, I have an open mind. I'll give it a shot again.
So here's the thing. Google owns Waze. Waze uses Google Maps data. So if you're using Google Maps, you're using the exact same data that Waze has. Including all the reports from Waze about accidents and all that stuff. Those are fed into Google, so it goes both ways. No pun intended. With Waze, what I've found is you just have to trust it. And you may trust it and then it proves you wrong.
That was my problem.
But don't second guess it, right? If it tells you to do it, just do it. and, you know, heading into, Skylar and I drove to Manhattan last weekend. Getting in and out was super cake just because Waze did it. It doesn't tell you it's recalculating. It just tells you where to go. That's it.
All right. I'll give it a shot again. And it will have to earn my trust, but I will keep an open mind.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, we need to move on because there's other stuff I want to talk about today. But before we get there, I want to talk about Away. And Away, what they've done is they've come up with these amazing suitcases. And since, hey, we all have to travel because that's just kind of how the world works, we might as well use suitcases that do what we need. And one of the big things that I'm liking about their suitcases ever since I was lucky enough to learn about them, the whole idea of four wheels on like a carry-on bag at first didn't seem like that big of a deal to me until I saw how that really works. And then also the ability to have my devices charging while they're in the suitcase. That's kind of a cool thing. And now, Dave, you've had some travel experience, and so I thought I'd kind of rip you in and see what you think.
Yeah, so I've used the Away bag, or suitcase, I should say. It's a hard shell bag, but it's very, very lightweight. I mean, the first thing you notice when you get this thing is how light this suitcase is, and it does. It has all four wheels are totally rotatable. It makes a huge difference. I used it, in fact, for that trip to Manhattan. One of the cool things about the Away bag, we're just talking about Waze, so that comes out of my mouth. One of the cool things about the Away bag is the way the internal compartments work. There's one for your soft stuff mm-hmm. that you can really compress down, and it's got built-in compression straps, and then it's got the other half of the suitcase is a zippered portion mm-hmm. for all of your non-compressible stuff, your shoes, your bathroom case, all of that stuff. And it really works to fit it all together, makes life super easy. Once you get to the hotel, you just pop it open. All your stuff's where it needs to be. It's even got a built-in laundry bag. It's fantastic. I've really blown away with, no pun intended, with the Away bag.
Awesome. All right. And I think this is changing how I travel, which that's saying a lot. I'm a bag junkie. So, you know. There you go. Hey, you guys can get a discount on this bag. There's $20 off. What you need to do is go to the Away website. It's awaytravel.com/TDO. And then use the discount code TDO. Get that $20 off. And then you're good to go. You've got this amazing suitcase. You've got a $20 discount, and then you can travel and be really cool like Dave and like me. So thank you to Away for being our sponsor. That's awaytravel.com/TDO, and then use that discount code TDO as well. Okay. So Dave, you and John Braun talked a little bit about Wi-Fi networks on this last weekend's Mac Geek Gab. I'll include a link in the show notes so people can hear all of that as well. One of the things that you were talking about networks, and so that got me thinking about what can people do to make sure that they set up their network in a secure way? And I thought maybe you could offer up a hint or two.
Sure. Yeah. So, right. We were talking yesterday on, I guess this was show 655. It was brought up. The topic was brought up by a listener, a woman, Donna, who was trying to figure out what type of security exists on public Wi-Fi networks. Right. But the same thing applies at home. If you connect to a Wi-Fi network with no password, then that means that your data sent across that network is not encrypted. Now, you might be sending data over SSL, like if you connect to Mac Observer, which has the little lock in the browser bar, or you connect to your bank or whatever that is, that's going to be encrypted. But anything you send over Wi-Fi is not encrypted by the Wi-Fi connection unless you use a password to connect, and that password is part of the encryption key. It's not the entire encryption key. So if somebody knows the password, they still can't decrypt your traffic. But that's why you're seeing in like coffee houses and places like that, you'll walk in and you'll see we have free Wi-Fi. Here's the password. Well, by forcing you to enter a password, it forces encryption to happen on the connection. And it means the people that are there sniffing around can't get at your data just by sniffing it at the Wi-Fi packets that are going by. So at home, this is why even if you're sort of out in, you know, separate from people that neighbors that could connect, I think it's still very, very worthwhile to set a password on your Wi-Fi. If you do this, your router's not going to let you set an insecure password. And by that, I mean using an insecure protocol. Right now, you're going to want to use WPA2 as your encryption for your Wi-Fi network. WEP went away a long time ago. Mm-hmm. In fact, the way the standards work now, if you use the old WEP encryption, if you can even get your router to enable it, your speeds have to be limited to 54 megabits a second. And that is intentional to discourage people from doing it. As a frame of reference, even single stream 802.11ac has a 433 megabit per second max. So you really don't want to be limited to 54. But your router won't let you do it anyway. Yeah. So WPA2, but using any kind of password will make sure that your Wi-Fi traffic is encrypted. And that's a good thing.
Awesome. Okay. I love that. And I'm betting there's a lot of people that had no idea that simply by putting that password on their Wi-Fi router, they were enabling encryption.
Yeah. That's sort of the sad part about it is that without a password, it's not encrypted. And the reason is you're not choosing an encryption scheme, right? That's why Wi-Fi was built that way, because there was a period of time where there were Windows machines, I saw quite a few of that, the hardware, the Wi-Fi hardware in them couldn't do anything more than WEP. So if they had built encryption into just Wi-Fi standard, it would have to have been something very, very weak. And so it's better. It is better this way, but it would be nice to turn it on without having to use a password, like to just use a blank password and then still have it encrypt the traffic. But that's just not how Wi-Fi works. So,
all right. Well, until someone decides to completely redesign Wi-Fi and start from scratch, we'll just put passwords on our Wi-Fi networks.
Yeah, well, it's not so bad.
I have a feeling that Satya Nadella would never have made that mistake. I know that's another conversation for another time, but
I don't think it was up to Microsoft at all. It was just up to the hardware vendors buying chips, Wi-Fi chips that just didn't support anything beyond WEP. That's all. That was what caused that. It wasn't a Windows problem. It was literally a hardware issue. There were just less expensive Wi-Fi chips that you know, various hardware vendors would source and put in laptops, and they just
race to the bottom.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's how it goes. There were Apple devices that did that too. It just they weren't in the market at the time that this transition happened. So, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, we're out of time, so we need to wrap up. Dave, thank you so much for that great Wi-Fi tip. And now make sure everyone that I know puts a password on their Wi-Fi network.
Yeah, it's worth it.
Totally worth it. All right. And Brian, thank you for being here as well.
Yeah, thanks for having us, man. Good times.
It's always great to have you here. Thank you to Away for being our sponsor. Head over to their website, awaytravel.com/TDO, and check out those carry-on bags, because they're really slick. And be sure and use the discount code TDO to get $20 off of yours. Listeners, thank you for being here. We will see everyone again tomorrow.